You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is your host, Matthew Raphael Johnson, and today's date is the 16th of November, 2023. Today I'm going to speak of a place that I've not lectured on before or anything. In fact, very few people do. People very easily forget it exists, and yet I'm not making a prediction here, but because there's too many problems with it. But it's conceivable that Mongolia is going to be the flashpoint of the next battle between liberalism and Asia. Recently, the last year maybe, there's been a subtle yet definitely noticeable increase of articles on Mongolia, and especially her relationship with both Russia and China. Now, despite Mongolia being fairly large on paper, it only has a few million people, 99% of whom are Mongols. Strangely enough, despite it being a former Soviet satellite, in fact, the very first Soviet satellite, it has one of the best records for corruption. It's one of the least corrupt societies. Again, I say that after saying it's 99% Mongol, and I think there's a clear connection there. But there's one of two ways to look at the country. Either it's strange that the media doesn't really talk about it much, despite the fact that it is squished between Russia and China. Of course, it's landlocked. It faces two huge countries. The other way to look at it is because it's mushed between Russia and China, not a whole lot of people want to write about it. That seems to be changing. There's a few reasons for this. On this program, we've spoken of the Belt and Road Project. And what I didn't realize until recently is how essential Mongolia is. Both Moscow, Ulaanbaatar, and Beijing are always meeting with each other. And they've come up with the China-Mongolia-Russia Economic Corridor. This is one of the central corridors of the entire Belt and Road Initiative. Understand, the Belt and Road is China and Russia are doing this together to create an alternative trading bloc to the WTO. And that's very important. Now, I have to warn you too, that Mongolia is known for having unpronounceable names. I mean, even more than normal. So I'm going to either butcher them or I'm just going to ignore them and just say, a president or something. But it wasn't that long ago, Wang Yi visited Mongolia, that's the foreign minister of China, and made it clear that the CMREC, called the Prairie Road from Mongol point of view, and doesn't divide the two countries anymore. In fact, it unifies them. But using Mongolia turns out to be the shortest path to Europe. Mongolia knows that it is in an excellent position to be a logistics center. And you have two transit routes. This is trains, this is, roads. The so-called Mongol Vector, which is from Mongolia to Belarus. And the other one, China, Mongolia, Germany. And these have been running for some time now, providing Mongolia with access to markets they didn't have before. not that Mongolia is making anything that the West wants. Oh, except they're sitting on mountains of gold and other key minerals. This is why Elon Musk has suddenly, as of last year, become very interested in Mongolia. And what the Chinese army's reaction is pretty substantial. But Mongolia is essential to the BRI. And there was a transport and logistics conference in Eurasia, it's called, in 2017. And that's another place where Mongolia's absolutely pivotal role was laid out. There's not a whole lot of money in Mongolia, so these minerals are being mined. I mean, but Mongolia is very dependent on its mining by Russian, Chinese, and, of course, state-owned firms. So these trade routes that I'm talking about are economically and geopolitically extremely important. And Mongolia, that means they're in a very good position to extract benefits from Peking and Moscow. Mongolia is very much part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. They're not a full member, but they're observers. They're between two members. And the current president, Yukhgagdin Khrushchev, I'm pretty confident there's no Mongols listening to this. So, but this president was a military man, and he is in power now, elected. Mongolia has a semi-presidential system, so both a premier and a president rule together. Not only is he a military man, but he is the one who pushed Mongolia's role in the Belt and Road and pushed for all this Chinese investment. All the energy deals with both Russia and China has come through his office. Now, you may have read about this, but all bets are off when Victoria Nuland shows up in the capital of Mongolia. There's too much going on here for this to be irrelevant. Needless to say, she condemns this president. She has a bunch of USAID people in tow. There's been some weak attempts, you know, under Trump. Trump met with the president there. Pompeo offered an aid package, though Mongolia has zero trade with the U.S. But the other problem Mongolia has is that it's landlocked. That automatically means that the Belt and Road is going to be its ticket out. It's going to change everything when they're inserted as this is nearing completion. Now, the only problem is that Mongolia is over-reliant on China, or I should say is reliant on China. 80% of Mongolia's export goes there, and that's, I don't know, coal and gold and copper. And this very, very, you know, this drive to diversify the companies that are digging in the ground is extremely important. Now, the South Gobi Tolgoi mine is run by Canadian Ivanhoe Mines and a Rio Tinto. So they have allowed some Western companies in, but China's doing very well. For a while, everyone was talking, you know, the regime projects its own problems onto China, thinking that, you know, it's doing badly, finally the miracle's over. They say that about once a month. So while having misgivings at first, Mongolia is fully committed to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, BRICS, and the CMREC, or these two routes to Russia and, of course, from there to Europe. But Putin and Xi met at one of the Belt and Road forums, and both of them said, essentially Putin said, that this is really about recreating commodity supply chains. You know, the maritime Silk Road is, and the land-based one is being rebuilt. And the point is to bypass Western control choke points. Now, I've been talking about this for a while, where you have BRICS, the SCO, the Belt and Road, the Eurasian Economic Union, all fitting together. I spoke of all of these groups at one time or another, especially the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And now with Indonesia in 2024, and the heartland, to use Mackinder's, I'm not a fan of that, but geopolitics, you know, Eurasianism and geopolitics are very different from one another. But this would have the control of the heartland, this huge belt between, say, the Caucasus Mountains and the Pacific Ocean. A flat steppe, very tough to control, but in the geopolitical school, whoever controls it has an almost unassailable position. Something I question. At a minimum, whoever has the resources to control it already is a dominant hegemon. And as it stands now, China and Russia are sharing it, and Mongolia then can side with one or the other depending on its interests. So, why is Victoria Nuland in Mongolia? Well, I've given you some indication as to why. She gets off the plane. First thing she does is condemn the lack of democracy in Mongolia, despite all offices being elective. It's an ethnically homogenous society. There's three major political parties, and for the life of me, I can't figure out who believes what. Obviously, I don't speak Mongolian, although the Soviets did give their alphabet to Mongolia. So Mongolia uses some variation of the Cyrillic alphabet. Mongolian is an Altaic language, so it's closer to Korean than it would be to Chinese. And you understand the position that the U.S. is in. There is a humiliating loss in many countries, Iraq and Afghanistan. There is the deindustrialization of Central Europe. There is her lack of any domestic legitimacy. There's, and most recently, the inability to control the rise of Russia and China, the failure of the sanctions, and obviously what's happening in Gaza. Whatever respect the U.S. had in the third world is now long gone. Now, we all know who Victoria Nuland is. She's the acting deputy secretary of state, at least at one point. And she was, in her own right, she isn't powerful. It's who hires her that matters. She's obviously very impressionable. I can't even believe the vice president, the so-called vice president of the U.S. went over there. Can you imagine that idiot going to Mongolia? What the hell does she know? But Victoria Nuland gets off the plane. And here's what she says. We're going to shake up the youth. Mongolia is confident that the Americans will not succeed. And that's talking directly to the Mongolian leadership. And the head of the republic, the name I already mentioned, has no interest in her, has no interest in the color revolution she's financing. And Mongolia, given its precarious position between two larger countries with no outlet to the sea, they're not going to be a puppet of anyone, not China, not Russia, and not the United States. And, well, you have a lot of Western companies secretly joining the Belt and Road Project, because they know that's where the future is. The U.S. will officially sanction anyone who's involved in it. Now, the theory is that Mongolia, her geographic position serves as a springboard for possible operations against the Chinese. But Mongolia is not the best bet because of her ethnic purity, because of how well she's doing within the SCO, and it's just not the easiest place to get to. It is a great place, though, for Johnson's Law to work, because no one knows anything about it. But the same organizations that were part of Yugoslav, the Ukrainian color revolutions, are in Mongolia right now. The Russian member of the State Duma, who Sholben Karu, Karu is his, he's a member of the State Duma, the lower house, and his district borders Mongolia. He was the first one to say a while ago that the NGOs in Newland are at work in Mongolia, very active, he said. He didn't name any specific organizations, but it's pretty clear that USAID is there. On April 18th of this year, it launched its five-year Mongolia strategic framework. And of course, it's the same slogans. The strategy focuses on supporting Mongolia's efforts to strengthen democratic institutions, enhance national sovereignty, and diversify its economy. Diversification meaning allowing the Americans to do what they please, and national sovereignty meaning not listening to the Chinese. I mean, you have to know how to read these stupid statements. And of course, you know, these are soft power tools that the U.S. is engaging in. And USAID, not a shock, is promoting anti-Chinese and anti-Russian ideas there. In fact, this is right from their website concerning this five-year plan. The influence of Mongolia's authoritarian neighbors, coupled with relatively new democratic institutions, threatened the country's democratic future. Now, you read that, and it says, we can't afford to lose another country. Russia and China are both very popular in Mongolia. What isn't popular is becoming a stooge of anybody. But Washington has granted some aid to Mongolia recently. But it was in August that Kamala Harris went to meet the Mongolian prime minister, whose name I'm not going to try. Actually, he went to D.C. And the U.S. announced these new funds to control the media in Mongolia. And that's where the democratic future is. Remember, Israel and Ukraine today are both considered democracies in the West. So having a total one-party controlled media state is not necessarily non-democratic. And of course, it was back in April 2023 concerning the position of the U.S. in Ulaanbaatar, the capital. And she's posted on Twitter about it. Now, the other thing, and this is a big mistake from the Mongol point of view, according to Izvestia, the Pentagon has opened its biological research programs there. As of right now, I don't know if they have full permission, but these are the laboratories that were dismantled in Ukraine, and this is where they're going, because they could pretty much do whatever they want there. There were 46, which were fully admitted, Pentagon-supported laboratories in Ukraine, but Mongolia does seem to be an excellent place. Clearly, you know, you have 3 million people living there, but colossal resources of copper, gold, and uranium. And the largest deposits haven't even been touched yet. The other reason the U.S. is there is to disrupt the Power of Siberia 2 pipeline. And all the roads and all the rail lines using Mongolia as a hub, which I've mentioned already. Now, another reason that Newland is there is that next year is going to be an election for the legislature. And while the president is too popular to get rid of as of right now, they can try to control the legislative elections. And given the arrogance and the failures of the U.S. in the past, both Russia and China, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in general, is not going to permit this to become another flashpoint. Because wherever Victoria Nuland goes, the country becomes a failed state. But with this oil, with gas, with the Belt and Road, Mongolia, kind of like Tibet was a few years ago, a wedge between the two countries that can be exploited. But, you know, very recently, the Mongolian president said, in a meeting actually with Putin, that the priority of Mongol foreign policy is developing relations with Russia as a way to counterbalance in China. But since those two are allies anyway, Mongolia might be in an excellent position. Now, I mentioned Elon Musk. What does he have to do with anything? Well, the Communications Regulatory Commission of Mongolia has issued a license for SpaceX to operate as a service provider using low-orbit satellites for Starlink to provide the internet service in the country. Now, this is extremely important. This is this year, of course, I think July of this year. Mongolia's new recovery policy is going to use Elon Musk. And, of course, Mongols say that, you know, Starlink technology will provide greater access to harder-to-reach areas of the country, which is everywhere. And this has to do with Nuland's visit in the sense that everybody, no matter how remote, is going to get American-controlled media. And it's also to go get around the Golden Shield, or the Great Firewall of China, blocking subversive websites. And this is another reason that Musk is worried about and investing in Mongolia. China reacted vehemently. Now, it's already planned to provide services to Pakistan as well as Mongolia. These are neighbors of the Xinjiang region, Inner Mongolia, and influencing people, especially the Chinese, getting around their policies of blocking certain American websites. It's kind of like an American university, you know, half the web is blocked out. And no state could shut it down in this case. Now, the Chinese claimed that they've gone to SpaceX and says, you know, you're not going to be targeting us here. But they did make a point. Musk told the editor of the Financial Times, admitting that I'm not doing this in China, but he said that Starlink is the backbone of the Ukrainian army's command and control system on the battlefield. And China also needs to have this capability. So this isn't just a matter of having a few more satellites out there. This is something very different. Musk is also involved in some of the copper and rare earth elements for Tesla. Now, I have an article here. It's in Chinese. And so this is auto translated since I don't speak it. And this is from a Chinese military website. And they're extremely upset about SpaceX. They've already delivered a large number of these satellite communication terminals. And they're talking about Ukraine in this case, and provided high-speed internet services. Now, this has nothing to do with that fourth world country. It has to do with the interactions with drones, facial recognition technology, and of course, he already admitted that he was intervening in Ukraine's operations against Russia. Now, the Starlink project started off with 12,000 satellites, and now they've pushed it to 42,000. So things like, you know, distribution and, you know, rapid reconfiguration are within reach. But it is connected with the military, and the Chinese are not shy about pointing that out. Technically, it's disguised as a civilian set of satellites, but the U.S. military is involved in it. Some of the launch sites are built at Vandenberg Air Force Base. The technical verification tests are about interconnection between satellites and the fighters of the U.S. Air Force. This is not merely a peaceful improvement of the internet connection. I'm unaware of any Mongols who give a damn about having 5G instead of 4G. So the only reason they could be doing this is to continue to spy on the Chinese. And that's why the Chinese military is involved. SpaceX has received money from the U.S. Air Force concerning encryption and things like that. It's definitely military aircraft as well. Using SpaceX to transmit data across military networks is already in place. In fact, in 2020, SpaceX received $150 million for the transition of Starlink to a military apparatus. And Musk is not shy about this, that he's working with the Air Force and all this. So this gives the U.S. an awareness of any specific situation that it doesn't have before. This is high-speed military communication. And the service itself creates such a command structure. The U.S. military covering combat platforms, everything from, you know, bombers, drones, nuclear submarines, and improve accuracy and anti-interference capabilities, improving drone effectiveness. That's why this is there. That's why Elon Musk cares. Of all the places to invest, he picks Mongolia. It's entirely because of its location. And as I already said, the rare earth minerals are being used by Tesla, if not right now, very, very shortly. So, the Air Force has already said the F-35A used the Starlink satellite system for data transmission. So this is nothing new, and no one's really hiding this at this stage. Now, when it was first announced, it was. And there's occasion, the civilian nature of this. But clearly, that's not where the money is coming from. And SpaceX apparently now is a part of the American foreign policy establishment. Regardless of whatever else Elon Musk might do, he is a part of the regime, however you slice it. So the point of all of this is that you're dealing with a country that no one talks about until very recently that is extremely strategic, both from the Shanghai Cooperation Organization's point of view, but also from the American point of view. It has a similar position of Azerbaijan in relation to Iran. But the rapid development of Mongolia seems to be happening without a whole lot of American influence in a racially almost pure country, only 3 million people. These corridors, the China-Mongolia-Russia corridor connecting the Silk Road Economic Belt to Russia's transcontinental rail plan. And, of course, Mongolia's own Prairie Road program. That's right, straight from the from RT. So everything that they're talking about over there is trilateralism. Russia, China, and Mongolia. And at the 16th summit of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, it was in Uzbekistan, 2016, that was dedicated to integrating Mongolia without infringing its sovereignty into the Belt and Road project, into this idea of the steppe heartland trade route. There's no doubt that the U.S. now suddenly have become heavily involved in manipulating the elections there, especially right now, and Elon Musk's presence has already provoked Chinese military to complete distraction. We're talking about roads, railways, oil gas pipelines, power lines, connecting Mongolia with the infrastructure of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the Eurasian Economic Union, and Mongolia being this land bridge connected to the most important transit corridor between Asia and Europe. We both know that China and Russia are seeing their GDP skyrocket. They complement each other, and Mongolia can be a part of that. I'm not so sure the U.S. has that kind of power right now. Yes, the U.S. wants to control the elections. It'll use Musk's internet service to do it. All of these institutions apparently now are connected to get their hands on at least a disruptive, possibly disruptive element in the infrastructure projects known as the Belt and Road. The sanctions have failed miserably. The trade war on China has failed miserably. And the pipelines are largely completed. Mongolia has a huge stake now in the Steppe Road project. And the Trans-Mongolian Railway Corridor, all of these connections are so extraordinary that the only way, I mean, if Tibet is not going to, China's popular in Tibet. Tibet had been brought from fourth world to first world in a decade. Now, they're going to hate Mao, obviously. But after that, that's a completely different story. The U.S. has failed in Tibet, despite the fact that the Dalai Lama is on the CIA payroll. That's right in the budget. So to have a backup, Mongolia seems to be the way to go. How they get there, you know, Tibet's easy because it's just north of India. There's a far greater access point. Of course, Elon Musk is trying to solve that problem by simply making everything virtual. What the Chinese are going to do, this largely, no pun intended, this largely was swept under the radar, the establishment of this. But all of a sudden, people are talking about Mongolia, and every once in a while, Elon Musk comes up. These pipelines, these roads, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the Belt and Road, are the end of liberal hegemony. You're talking about the bulk of the world's population and the bulk of the world's resources, with a deliberate movement to preserve the nation state and the civilization as the main actors. Something that, of course, the U.S. Abhors. You know, Russia, you know, despite the dependency on China from Mongolia's point of view, Russia is the main supplier of Mongolian power and energy and many manufacturing products. The fact that Mongolia is dependent on the mining sector and the recent Chinese ban on Australian coal makes their position a lot better. And the coal market is based really in Manchuria, Inner Mongolia, and Mongolia proper. And this is just the beginning of what this country is capable of there. And the U.S. is not going to take that lying down. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.